keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and theantimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back. Live and well, broadcasting from San Diego, California, here on April 17th, 3 days before the big holiday that we celebrate out here in California, 420. Again, we're back. Crazy times around the world, bunch of shit happening, and we're going to try to break through a little bit of it tonight. Maybe some of the most important stuff that needs to be talked about that isn't being talked about. Hopefully we'll be joined a little bit later by my co-host, D.B. Schwartz. Maybe Jake Anderson. If not, I think we'll have Jake Anderson live in the studio on Wednesday. He's supposed to be showing up. And then I just got off the phone with Manny Aguilar, our longtime guest here on Anti-Media Radio. He's going to be in next Monday. So we're going to have a couple of cool guests in studio over the next 7 days. And so, you know, that'll be interesting. For now, you're going to have to deal with me all by myself, but I got a lot of stuff to talk about. First of all, rest in peace, Joshua Paniagua, one of our awesome writers. Dude was way too young, early 20s. He just died. I don't even know how it happened, but I'm assuming it was some complications with some medical issues. We had just published an article by him a day before it happened. You know, he was being published, like he was feeling fine. You know, this stuff came out of nowhere, and it's just a huge loss. And you know, his family is obviously going through a lot of stuff. You know, Cassius, who was actually the one, Cassius Methel, you guys may know him. He used to write for us at the Anti-Media. He now writes for The Mind Unleashed, and you know, one of the most viral guys out there. I mean, he's got some of the most views on any article you'll see on the internet. He's actually the one who introduced us to Josh. They both grew up together and lived near each other up in Sacramento. And, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting Josh and hanging out with him here. Really cool guy. Really smart. So, I mean, this is a huge loss. So, you know, you're not going to be seeing his stuff on our site anymore, but he'll be living on through his existing content. I mean, you guys want to go see his stuff, go. He wrote under a pen name by the name of Josh Muir on our site, and you can go see that, all the stuff that he's written. Anyway, also another troubling development, Hugo Castro, a local activist here in San Diego who helps with immigrants, and he works with an organization called the Border Angels. do a lot of really, really good work cross-border, both sides of the border here in San Diego and Tijuana. The last we've heard of him is he was on Facebook Live warning. He was on his way down to Mexico City to participate in some kind of activism event, and he went missing. He went on Facebook Live and warned that someone was following him and that he was worried about his safety. He said that maybe government forces that were operating out of basically truck and trailer, semi-trucks. That's what he said. He went on Facebook Live, and then a few minutes later, well, after that, that's basically all anyone's ever heard of, seen of him. So he's missing. So, you know, local activists gone missing, possibly kidnapped down in Mexico. Helping put the word out for Hugo Castro. If anybody knows of his whereabouts, anything like that, please let us know and we'll get you in touch with the right people. Holding out hope, though. You know, a lot of times these people get kidnapped and they just try to get ransom and stuff, and they don't just kill people, kidnap them and kill them, but, you know, a lot of times they're trying to get ransom and stuff like that. So, you know, we're hoping that that's the case. Maybe even better than that, you know, but worst case scenario, we're hoping that something like that happened, we can get him back. He does so much great work here in San Diego that it would just be a huge loss to a lot of people if worst case scenario happens. So that being said, let's get on to the news, because there is a lot of news stuff to cover. A lot. North Korea, top story on the anti-media right now, which is something that needs to be read, and, you know, cooler heads need to prevail here. Ex-Pentagon chief says North Korea is not suicidal, so they won't attack the U.S. first. And that's obvious. I mean, North Korea, I'd be very surprised if North Korea had the technical capability to reach even like those uninhabited islands of Alaska that are like really close to that region. Like, I don't think that they would be able to shoot that far with their technology. I don't think they'd be able to reach even Hawaii. I don't think mainland United States could even possibly be attacked by them at this point. That being said, even if they could attack us, there's no reason for them to attack us. I mean, there's no chance in hell of little tiny North Korea beating the United States in a war. Like, what in the hell are we thinking on this? I saw someone online talking about it. It would be like a UFC fighter beating the shit out of a toddler and then saying, well, I was just defending myself because that toddler was going to, you know, threaten my life or threaten my safety or my life, liberty, and my property. That's the same thing. We're sending three aircraft carriers over there. I mean, one aircraft carrier of the United States is probably stronger than the entire North Korean Navy. Or not Navy, sorry, Air Force. Like, one aircraft carrier is probably the strength of their entire Air Force. We're sending three aircraft carriers over there, not to mention how many submarines and military presence that we actually have physically, troops on the ground in South Korea. There's, I think, around 30,000 troops that we have there. Like, all of this hype, and believe me, the mainstream media is feeding into this, that North Korea is some type of rogue nation that it can't be trusted, and, you know, it's going to jeopardize its neighbors and it's going to threaten the United States. North Korea hasn't attacked anybody. North Korea hasn't attacked anybody. I mean, how many times does this need to be said? North Korea hasn't hurt anybody outside of its own borders. Now, of course, the argument can be made that North Korea is a terrible, shitty government that does terrible, shitty things. I mean, there's definitely, you know, prison camps, slave labor camps, basically, prison labor camps. And, you know, they've got a strict, super strict government that censors the shit out of its people. But how can the United States go over there and tell them, hey, guys, you're doing government wrong. Like, you need to do it our way. How can the United States government do that? What type of moral high ground do we have when we've got the largest prison population per capita that has basically ever existed on the planet? We've got more people in jail than anybody. How can we go tell North Korea that they're doing freedom wrong? How can we do that? Like, how is it our place to go tell, hey, Korea, you guys aren't treating your people correctly. Meanwhile, you got a drug war going on here in the United States that is incarcerating millions of people for growing the wrong type of plant. Like, we are not doing freedom right. We can't go tell North Korea how to do freedom right. That's not how any of this works. Donald Trump is the most unpopular president since they began polling, which has been decades. The Congress hovers around a 9% approval rating. 9%! How can a country where their legislature has a 9% approval go to North Korea and say, hey, North Korea, you're doing it wrong, bro. You got to do it like we do. You see, our people love us. Oh, wait. That's right. They don't. Only 9% think you're doing a good job there, buddy. So this kind of shit just pisses me off because we're in this alternate reality here, basically, where it's like, well, you know, the United States has the second largest nuclear armament in the world. We've got nuclear submarines capable of, like, destroying whole countries. We've got, you know, nuclear-powered aircraft carriers right off of your coast. But you guys can't develop missiles, even though you haven't attacked another country ever. When was the last time you heard of Korea? Let alone North Korea, but just Korea in general. When was the last time anybody can remember Korea attacking somebody? Has Korea invaded China? Has Korea invaded Japan? Has Korea invaded the United States? When was the last time Korea was in a war that wasn't they were defending themselves from people invading their country? The United States was in the 1950s, we were invading Korea. And they fought back. That's their only crime. They fought back. Again, I'm not a Kim apologist. Kim Jong is, for all I know, a piece of shit. For all I know, he treats his people like shit. For all I know, he's rich and fat, and his people are starving. But how different is it really from the United States? I mean, most of these governments are very, very similar, outside of just a couple of details, a couple of statistics. Other than that, it's the same. North Korea probably has an oligarchy. They probably got a handful of rich guys, including Kim Jong, who are basically, in their culture, the riches of the rich, and they're probably millionaires. They probably don't even have billionaires there because they're so damn poor. How much different is that than the United States, where our president is a billionaire? And all the people that are at the top, 500 of them or so, they own the same amount of wealth as the poorest second half. So how different is it? They got an oligarchy there. You know that North Korea calls itself a Democratic Republic of North Korea? Don't we call ourselves something pretty similar? Aren't we a republic too? Don't we have democratic values? I mean, North Korea is called the Democratic Republic of North Korea, right? So, how different are the two? Now, here's the big difference. We talk about nuclear weapons. Well, who in the world has ever used nuclear weapons against somebody else? Well, that would be us. We are the only ones to bomb other people with nuclear weapons. Yet, at the same time, we feel compelled to go around telling North Korea and Iran and other countries, hey, you guys can't develop this technology. You can't be trusted with it. So I come back, I have the counter argument here. Well, why can't they be trusted? How many countries has the United States invaded in the past 20 years? There's a lot. There's a bunch. Like five or more, right? And then you look at North Korea and you say, well, wow, your president, he is a weird guy, but let's see how many countries you've invaded and, you know, subjugated or destabilized or whatever it is you guys do. Let's see how many countries North Korea has done. There's none. There's nothing there. And in their entire history that I'm aware of, now, I'm not very good on Asian history, but I can't recall a single time in the last couple centuries that Korea was actually invading somebody or attacking somebody outside of their country. I really can't remember any of that. I remember Asia was the subject of European invasions and American invasions, and they defended themselves and fought back. Yeah. And the only Asian country was Japan that went over there and really messed things up, invading people and stuff. Joined by my longtime co-host DB Schwartz. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Sorry, I'm late, dude. I've just been listening to you, and you know, the the only empire, the only true Asian empire ever was the Empire of Japan. Even China never was an empire. They've had many a dynasty, but they haven't colonized off their shores. Meanwhile, Japan at one point owned the entirety of the Korean Peninsula. They owned Mongolia and Manchuria. They owned the Philippines. They literally owned the entire Pacific. So the only place we had was, well, Pearl Harbor. And a lot of people don't know that we really did invade Korea from Japan. So we were actually like fighting on behalf of Japan in the Korean War. A lot of people don't get that. Like, they think we were enemies and everything. By the time 1950 rolled around, the UN was in full force and Japan was a permanent member. They were actually the member. It was us and Japan. So the Korean War was actually more adventuritism. And you'll notice the Department of War absolved after World War II, and we went from the Department of Defense. And what a lot of people will get by digging and doing more digging is that we actually are in defense of Japan now. So what a lot of people need to realize is our public policy, because our debt is 70%, now 75% owned by Japan, we defend them. We do what they say first and foremost, then maybe Saudi Arabia, and then maybe Israel.
All right, we're back. I don't know what happened there. Some kind of crazy stuff. As soon as we got DB on the line, it went quiet. And then my computer froze up for some reason or another. DB, you there, man? What's up, dude?
Hey, I was dropping too much real knowledge, and we got knocked off.
Yeah, dude. Everything you were saying, whatever it is you said, was like so encrypted with knowledge that it overloaded the computer system. And like,
well, dude, I mean, here's the thing. There's all these conspiracies about World War II, and the truth of it is we brokered a ceasefire with them. There was never a – it's not like we conquered Japan. We did not. We sent in Marines to clean up after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and it ended up with 100,000 of our Marines getting radiation poisoning and eventually dying. So a lot of people don't put two and two together. We didn't beat Japan. Yeah, we beat Germany. Yeah, we steamrolled them. Mostly the Russians actually took the brunt of those casualties. But we did not invade, nor did we beat Japan. That is just BS. They had biological weapons. They're going to use them on us. Yeah, we dropped some nukes. That was really messed up. It killed a lot of innocents, and that kind of cemented us as the bully of the world. And we haven't been allowed to actually really declare war or have a draft since. So, I mean, this is kind of hidden knowledge, but it's not really. You just kind of have to research it. And this Korean War is on behalf of Japan. Because China's getting too big. And if Korea were to unify and then they became they went into China's sphere, can you imagine how the world would change like really drastically if a unified Korea went into China's sphere? We couldn't really compete economically. So
yeah,
this is what we're seeing.
South Korea has been really, I don't know how to say it, Japanified. How do you say that? How do you say that? But they turned South Korea into very much...
They're like Japophiles. They love Japan, and it's kind of like a father culture in a way, but they're still distinct. But one interesting thing, Nick, is Seoul is the number one internet speed city in the world, followed by Tokyo. So there's like this... There's a rivalry where Korea's got better computers and Tokyo is leading the way in robotics.
Yeah, both of those countries are very... technologically advanced and high level tech, and
they're like one and two and we're three.
Yeah, the stuff they have is more several years advanced. Like my I knew a Korean guy that would go over there often, and he would come back with like these really advanced like camcorder, like I'm talking about this must have been like 10 years ago or something, and like dude would come back with like camcorders and shit that we wouldn't see here for like 3 or 4 years, and so they're very advanced. I think we have similar levels of technology, but they're so good at selling shit here that they just draw out the they draw this technology out for like years and but years. They, remember when the iPhone first came out, and in Japan they were like, oh, that's
yeah, it was old.
We had that years ago. What are you guys tripping on? But you know, it's like, oh shit, the iPhone.
You know the big difference though is like they'll manufacture their stuff and it doesn't break, and we're getting the crappy stuff from China, or they'll buy it from Taiwan, which is way better.
Yeah. So back to the topic here. North Korea, like, why? Why is the media provoking? And this has been going on. This is ongoing. Think about during, like, I mean, the propaganda against North Korea has been going on for a real long time, for a really long time. But, of course, after the Korean War, you're going to expect that kind of propaganda. But it really started ratcheting up after that whole Sony thing. You remember? And...
oh yeah, that complete wag the dog scenario.
But interesting, something that you brought up. Sony is a Japanese company, one of the biggest.
Yes, and, they are.
You were talking about how we're doing Japan's dirty work over there, because we've basically demilitarized them, though that is starting to change.
Well, Nick, they gotta have nukes at this point. So what do they need an army for? They're invasion proof.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting theory. I hadn't really thought about it like that. But Japan did, reportedly, Japan is bolstering U.S. naval forces now, and they're sending a couple of Japanese ships over towards North Korea with our guys, with our ships.
So they're getting ready, Nick, and that's...
yeah, it's not good.
First time in three generations they're getting ready.
Yeah, and so something interesting here is, again, going back to this Japanese... World War II history and stuff is, maybe we're getting ready to re-unleash Japan on, Eastern Asia, but under our circumstance, under our, understandings. And it's like, we're not against Japan this time around. We're with Japan.
Maybe we're the shock troops, Dick. Maybe we're going to go in and take all the brunt of it, and then they're going to come clean up with a Robotech or whatever.
Yeah, they'll send in their damn robots and go fight. But anyway, so the main point here, despite anything else, is that North Korea is like a toddler and the United States is like McGregor. Like, we're a UFC fighter and we're fighting against a 2-year-old North Korea. That's what we're looking at. When it comes to technology and economy and stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. North Korea's got a big, giant army because they're so damn paranoid because of what the stuff that... like, it's a vicious cycle here. We continue to make threats, and we continue to say, oh, well, North Korea is so bad. North Korea says, see, the United States hates us. They're going to try to do something. We need to keep building up our army. So the army keeps building up. Meanwhile, the U.S. keeps criticizing. And so, therefore, North Korea does have a big, giant, standing army. But their technology is whack. Like, they're still using, like, AK-47s. And not to bash AK-47s. It's a great gun. But
they can do a tremendous amount of damage to South Korea, but to us, they're, except for maybe the one satellite they have, and then maybe their submarines. But the problem with North Korea is, like, if they do something stupid and we have to respond, this collateral problem becomes China's, and they're not going to like that.
Yeah. And again, what is going on in North Korea? I mean, it goes back to what's going on in Syria. It's proxy stuff, right? I think everybody in the world knows that North Korea is somewhat of a proxy of China. I mean, they wouldn't even exist. North Korea wouldn't even be North Korea. It would all be one Korea if it weren't for the fact that China intervened in the Korean War and pushed the U.S. back, U.S.-led forces back to where the line is currently drawn.
Yeah, they have that
history in that area. That, Korea is the last time that we actually fought Chinese troops face to face.
And it didn't go well.
No, it didn't. We got beat, like, badly.
Well, we got beat by sheer numbers, and the carnage of it when people came back from Korea, they were completely shell-shocked by what they did. And yes, what we suffered, but the amount of troops we mowed down and the effect it took on people where they're like, we were just killing people for no reason, literally no reason. I mean, it's still divided. It didn't do anything. That whole war did nothing. It went back to the same line that it started at.
Yeah, so a lot of history in that area, and I think people need to read up on what has gone on there, and don't look to your typical history sources. You know, you don't want to read, well, you read the U.S. version of events, but you also want to read the Korean version of events, because the truth is always somewhere in between. You know, we can never just say, oh, well, we're only going to see this version of history. And that's what we got in our schooling system here in the United States, is one version of history. And it's told via our perspective, which is pro-empire, pro-war, you know, American exceptionalism, and let's downplay any crappy things that we've done, you know, slavery, genocide of Native Americans, stealing everybody's land, and all the bad things that we've done. That stuff is all downplayed in the history books. And all the stuff that we've done is treated as like heroic. Like, for instance, you know, the use of nuclear weapons in Japan. We're always taught that, oh, well, the reason we use nuclear weapons was to save, you know, invasion numbers and stuff like that. And, you know, many, many people since then have said, you know, it wasn't necessary. We didn't have to use nuclear weapons. You know, it didn't have to happen that way, but it did, you know. But in our mainstream history, we're taught that our use of nuclear weapons was to save lives. We were saving lives, because if we would have invaded, well, that would have been another 2 million people, you know. And so we're taught that it saves lives. So,
and they never tell you that they had those biological weapons from that messed up Unit 731 or whatever. Remember where they were experimenting on the Chinese in Manchuria? They'd perfected the Black Plague so well, they were going to shoot it at us. And people were like, well, what, with missiles? And I'm like, no, with balloons and blimps, because the jet stream comes our way. So it's like you can easily hit us from Japan with biocidals that are airborne.
Yeah.
We could have nuked them for a bunch of times. We actually only had enough for a couple more. So we could have only hit them two more times, and then they would have shot those biocidals and probably killed 80, 90% of the U.S., at least West Coast. And, I mean, that would have changed the course of history. So we came to some kind of peace. I'm telling you, like, everything we've learned is just whitewashed for our favor. And Japan doesn't care, because it's Eastern culture. They already save face. If you go over to Japan, they'll tell you everything I'm saying is true, because that's the real truth of history.
Very interesting, man. I'm glad that you know about that stuff, because I haven't done all the reading on it. But
it's like the most important stuff right now, Nick, because like, why are what in the hell wars are brewing, and why?
Yeah,
and it's always because like somebody's grandfather started some shit with someone else's grandfather.
Exactly. Bunch of old rich guys putting us young dudes into wars that are fought for reasons that we don't even know, or maybe we do know.
All grudges. It's like power and grudges, and like, they'd marry each other's daughters and sons to each other, and then they'd backstab, so they still have all this old hate. It's like, and then we're in the middle.
Yeah, we're the cannon fodder. But not all of these people up there near the top are trying to get us into war. The article we have on the anti-media is the ex-Pentagon chief is basically saying, look, North Korea is not suicidal. So they're not going to preemptively attack the United States or basically anyone else. That would just be dumb, because it's such a tiny country that if they were to use nuclear weapons, well, everyone knows if you use someone uses nuclear weapons, well, then someone's going to retaliate against back, you know, back against you with nuclear weapons. Now, first of all, North Korea doesn't got the technology to shoot a nuclear weapon from their country over to us. Second of all, they barely have primitive nuclear technology. And third of all, it's such a tiny country that we can drop several of our big thermonuclear devices and the whole place is done.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just not practical at all.
Isn't it logical to think China would probably shoot anything they would try to shoot down to avoid that situation, then they'd just go in with their troops and take out him? because they'd be like, dude, you're too crazy. Like,
you
know?
Yeah.
Like, imagine if Mexico attacked, like, I don't know, Panama or something. Like, we would just take them out. We'd be like, dude, you're too unreliable. You're too crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and you make a good point there, is that as big that China is, China's a huge, huge power, and their economic reports just came out today, and of course they're not completely accurate because they always fluff up the numbers, but their economy is like roaring back, you know, and so, you know, China's on the up, you know, on the upswing. They're not wanting to, while they're coming up, pick a big fight with the United States. That's not what China is trying to do. And so I think you're right. If North Korea actually did do something, which is very, very doubtful that they would do, but if they did, China has an incentive to stop it from happening, you know? And so I feel like maybe China would actually be the one to go in and say, okay, Kim Jong, you're done, bro. Like, we're gonna remove you and allow a fake election, and we're going to put our guy, you know, China's going to go in and give a pseudo election and put their guy, a China friendly guy, in power. You know, that to me is a more likely scenario than the United States actually going and invading North Korea.
You think they put their troops there just in case? That's what I think. You know, that's a show of force. Like, if you do anything, if you start hitting Seoul with even conventional mortars, like, we're just going to come in through the back door because, like, we can't trust you and you're putting us at risk.
Yeah. I mean, that makes more sense because I don't think the U.S. has any business going over there. I think I'm hoping that, you know, they're sending 3 aircraft carrier groups over there, according to South Korean media. And so hopefully it's just a show of force. And
Nick, do you know the carrier groups? And are those the ones that have been in dry dock forever and that have been getting upgraded?
Let me see what we got here.
Because if they're the upgraded ones, they're probably going to be full of drones as opposed to conventional aircraft.
Okay, let's see. Yonhap, which is a South Korean, one of their big media conglomerates, reports that in addition to the CVN-70 Carl Vinson, which is expected to arrive off the South Korean coast on April 25th, the CVN-76 Ronald Reagan and the CVN-68 Nimitz carrier group will enter the Sea of Japan next week. So it's the the Carl Vinson, the Ronald Reagan, the Nimitz carrier groups.
Interesting. So I'm going to look those up and see if those were the ones that were getting repaired for the last 6 months.
Well, the Carl Vinson, I know the Carl Vinson was stationed here in San Diego. So there's actually, in fact, I was just talking to my friend about this the other day. One of my neighbors may actually be on that carrier group, Carl Vinson, because, you know, he lives right here next to me, and I haven't seen the guy in about a month and a half, and he's in the Navy. So I figure he may be with that carrier group out there heading to Korea. So,
you remember those micro drones that got released from the F-16s?
Yeah.
They were going to put a whole swarm of those just as kind of like a backup to some of their top of the line conventional aircraft, like, and I'm talking about like thousands of those things just as a perimeter around these new fiber optic cable carriers. And then the carriers now are like impervious to almost everything because they're putting in those Gauss cannons. They can shoot down any missile way farther away than ever before. Those rail guns, you've seen them, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, man, these carrier groups are pretty formidable operations, dude. You know, they've got dozens of aircraft. They've got a bunch of support weapons. The ones I've been seeing I'm building here in San Diego, because, you know, San Diego is a big, for those listening tonight from around the world, around the country, you know, San Diego is a big, big-time naval station. I guess outside of Pearl Harbor, you know, San Diego is probably the main, you know, naval station on the West Coast. And I've been seeing the boats they're building, and they're like, they look like stealth boats. Like, they're big, giant, you know, destroyer, whatever you call these huge boats that shoot missiles and shit. They look stealth, dude. I don't know if you've seen these things.
They're like a pyramid, right?
Yeah. It's got like this big obelisk looking thing in the center. It's like really weird looking stuff, dude. And they're just super, super like technologically advanced, dude. Like these things are crazy advanced things. Like one of these ships is probably as strong as the entire North Korean military, is what I'm saying. And so we sent three carrier groups over there. That's enough like military equipment to take out like huge swaths of area.
Well, they have unlimited micro drones now, I think. Like, I may just be ahead of ourselves here, but I truly do think they put thousands of those that can swarm now autonomously. Like, how do you defend against that if you're flying in a regular plane and like 100 of these micro dudes just start shooting you up with miniguns? Like, it's still tearing up your whole plane. So, like, you go down, and what are you going to do, target one or two of them? I mean, there's no competing with what I think we have.
Yeah, and so, you know, there has been recent releases of those micro drones and stuff. So I don't know how they're using those yet, tactically speaking or whatever. But, yeah, man, like...
They're firing mini bullets, Nick, but they're going so fast that they go, like, subatomically through the cell and rupture, like, gas and shit and make planes explode that way.
Yeah, could be. They could be using that kind of technology. I mean, the stuff that they release to us, to the public, is like, oh, the F-16 dropping these drones out, and, you know, that's what they tell us about. But who knows the advanced shit they're already using. Hard to say. Anyway, let's move on to some more of this geopolitical stuff, because this is obviously the big, you know, the big news right now. And North Korea is one thing. And, you know, China is really kind of, you know, if we're looking at this from a further back perspective, it is a proxy war between, you know, the West and maybe Japan and China and whoever's aligned with China, which I would include Russia and North Korea, Iran, and then all the people that are bad people, supposedly, right? So we're dealing with proxy wars again. And all this stuff with... going on in Syria, you know, we're bombing the place like crazy, of course. Still, we're supposedly fighting ISIS. We're also bombing the Syrian government. That, of course, is a proxy war, again, between the U.S. and Russia. And there's a bunch of people caught in the middle. And this is the big problem, man. Like, it's like we have all these wars going on and shit, but they're all being... sold to us dishonestly, and they're being fought cowardly, and we're backing the wrong side. I mean, we're backing radical Sunni elements over there, who, you know, these are the kind of people who we're backing over there. We wouldn't even allow them in the country. And I'm not even talking about Obama. I mean, I'm not talking about Trump banning certain people from certain countries. Like, these are the kind of guys that wouldn't even be allowed in the country at all, even regardless, even during the Obama years. Like, these people, we're backing them in Syria. They aren't allowed to come to the United States. And it's a proxy war. Once again, a proxy war. And Trump, who ran on a campaign of, like, I'm going to end this big proxy war. I'm not going to take on Russia. That's stupid. They're fighting against terrorism. We don't need regime change. We're not going to go against the Syrian government. And so Trump ran on that platform. And he gets into office, and it's like, well, Trump's a Russian stooge. Trump works for Putin. Trump got elected by Russia. Trump, Russia, 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 Trump, Trump, Trump. And so Trump, what better way for you to get this Russian narrative off your back than to go almost start a war with Russia? What better way? It makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Right? I mean, bomb the Syrian government, which is an extension of Russia. Start a bunch of beef with Russia, and then no one can ever say that, oh, Trump's a Russian stooge. Where's the last story? Have you been on the Washington Post since Trump bombed Syria? Can you tell me the last time the Washington Post is saying that Trump was a Russian stooge? Can anybody tell me?
He's
story is gone. That has been put to rest. Everyone's like, oh, hey, he dropped a bomb on Syria. We're going to leave him alone. He's doing God's work now.
He's doing it. He's fantastic.
Hell of a job, buddy.
Hey, that's why I'm telling you, we know who's wearing the pants in this family, and it's the military. It doesn't matter which way, shape, or form it is. That's who gets half the money. That's who makes all the decisions. And we are the Department of Defense for pretty much Japan is what it looks like, and maybe some other people too. But we're not really – I don't know, man. I think the curtain's going to come up here soon.
China owns all of our debt and shit. Japan is our biggest debtor.
Yeah. China owns 20%, which is really – honestly, it's not that big of a deal. But 75%, which is Japan, that's a big deal.
Yeah, dude. So, you know, Japan pays for all this.
And the rest is South Korea. So there's the there you go. I mean, if you want to know what happened with World War II, the end of it, did we win in Europe? Sure. With Russia's help a lot. And the UK, of course.
Sure, won in Europe. And we went in and at the last minute went in and wiped up. Yeah. Took credit for it.
And then did we win in the Asian theater? Of course not, because who owns all our debt?
Yeah.
So we didn't win. We couldn't have, because otherwise we'd own their debt. So it's just we weren't bombed out. That's the only difference. We weren't hit.
Yep. There you go. So, yeah, man, I mean, just here's the main thing. The main thing is that we're given a pretext of what's happening. And they tell us that, well, we got to go stop Assad from gassing, you know, poison gassing his own people. So first of all, you have to be willing to believe the official reports from the government, from Trump, telling us that, hey, Assad used gas weapons on his own people, knowing damn well that it would provoke us into action and that it would cause a chain reaction event that could very well turn the tide of the war in his country, that he's willing to do that. So you got to believe that. Like, first of all, that is hard, very, very hard to believe. In fact, I don't believe it. I'm not saying it was a false flag. I'm not saying it was a hoax. But I don't believe what we're being told, that Assad gassed his own people. I don't buy that story.
Why would he if he was winning on the ground, like every reputable person that's actually there is saying?
No sense. It makes no sense, and therefore it's hard, very, very hard for me to believe.
Definitely makes sense that some crappy Syrian jet dropped some unguided missile onto a random building that had some munitions in it.
Could be. Could be. That's what the Syrian government has been saying. You know, so who believe?
How crappy are their pilots and how unguided are their bombs that they just kind of randomly hit that? I mean, or did they go for it? Because if they went for it, then that is a war crime, because that's a civilian area that you're using. You know you're going to unleash chemical weapons on because you're blowing it up.
And you can take
it out a different way.
And so here's the thing. So Syria claims that it accidentally hit a weapons munition and that it released gas. Okay, fine. Now, the next headline that just came out late last week was that the Syrian government said the U.S. hit a ISIS warehouse that was also storing chemical weapons that leaked out and possibly killed hundreds of people. So if we're going to just go around believing government narratives and we're going to say, okay, the U.S. says Assad gassed his own people, so Assad gassed his own people. Well, if we're going to believe that, then we also have to believe when Assad said, well, the U.S. dropped a bomb, released a bunch of chemical agents, so we have to believe that too. You see what I'm saying here? It's like, if we're going to believe government narratives, well, then we got to believe them all. Because if the government narrative is produced not only without proof, but also lacking any type of even circumstantial motive or anything, like there's absolutely no reason to assume or even speculate that Assad would want to use chemical weapons on his own people. It's hard to believe, and they don't have any proof. Well, then obviously you're going to want to ask more questions before you start dropping bombs, but that didn't stop Donald Trump. He went and launched 59 missiles that cost a lot of money each. And spent millions and millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars on bombing this airbase that within 24 hours was functional. Like, they spent tens of millions of dollars bombing this place, and they were flying missions out of the same base 24 hours later. How effective was it? I mean, really. So, you know, it's just, we're at a point, and we covered this on the anti-media, let me get the date, because this is a really good article by our author that's been doing, you know, covering the Middle East, Darius. Had him on the radio show a while back. I'm going to invite him back on probably next week. Nobody knows what's happening in Syria, but everyone is bombing it anyway. That's the headline. And basically, nobody knows what the hell is actually going on there. It is such a mess. You know, there's like 70 different countries involved in Syria now, on either side of this thing, on either side of this conflict. There's 70 different countries involved. And then actively bombing, there's like a bunch. Because the United States, whenever it goes into these places, it tries to build as if this is like a good thing. It's like, we got to build an international coalition to go help us bomb this place. It's like, so we got Australian jets in there bombing, you know, we got like Bahrainian jets in there, we have Saudi Arabian jets, we have American jets, we have British, French, you know, all these different countries are helping us bomb this place, therefore it's okay. Like, you know, it's like, we have a consensus here or something like that. I swear they sell it to us as it's a good thing. We have an international coalition. We're all bombing the place. But it's so complicated because there's so many different countries involved. And the amount of information, because the place is so polarized, that it's either you're landing in a government-run area or a Syrian rebel-run area, which includes ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Free Syrian Army, and like there are several moderate forces, but you know it seems like the more radical elements are more dominant. But you know, it's either if you bomb a place, you're either bombing in the government area or in the rebel held area. So how can you like say, how can you get reports from a rebel held area and take them credibly when you know that they have an agenda? They're fighting against the Assad government. Do you think they're going to say, oh yeah, our guys killed 20 people today on accident because we accidentally released a nerve agent or dropped the bottle or something? Or are they going to say, oh, Assad bombed our place and with a nerve agent, and that's why all these people died? Like, we can't trust the accounts coming out of there from either side of this fight. So, like, the only logical, the only human thing to do is to get out, to leave. We get out. Everybody gets out. And we let the damn people, those that are left still surviving, because a bunch of them have already died, and then the few that have not fled the country, let them sort it out. Like,
yeah, but they're
backing the factions over there, and Russia needs to stop backing the Assad government. Everybody needs to get the hell out.
But they're on the verge of like a massive civil war. Like, we saw that over the weekend there was this major suicide bombing in Aleppo. 80 kids died. It was just like ridiculous. It was the grossest thing ever. It was worse than that chemical attack for just straight graphicness. And it, you know, it was whitewashed. Nobody saw it. Nobody knows what's going on because
in a headline.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it's just like, it's just, I don't even know what we can do anymore. Like, it's just going to get partitioned. We're going to have to put the UN in there permanently. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the thing. This big bombing goes off over the weekend by some of these rebels. May have been ISIS, may have been al-Nusra, it may have been one of the other factions. There's like dozens of them at this point.
We'll never know. And it was a new low.
But I'll tell you,
depravity, man.
I'll tell you who didn't do it. It wasn't Assad, because if it was Assad, it would have been the headline. It would have been the main headline. You know what I'm saying? So
yep.
We know who didn't do it, and it wasn't Assad. So, I mean, there's just so much misinformation.
Think about who we're dealing with that would do that to that particular group of they were all kids, man, and their parents. Like, dude, if they ever get over here in numbers, we're going to have a massive problem.
Yeah, bad situation, really bad. And those are the guys, you know, the guys that are responsible for that are the guys that we've aligned ourselves with, you know. And so it's just a horrible situation that we need to stop involving ourselves with. Because right now, we are arming and funding. And when I say we, I mean you and me. Everybody out there listening tonight. We're paying for this stuff to go on. Like, this is us. We're paying to back the Syrian opposition, which just got done bombing buses full of kids and their parents over the weekend. You didn't hear about it because it was done by not... It couldn't be blamed on Assad or Russia. That's why you didn't hear about it. But it happened. And it's very, very concerning to me. In fact, it's like a source of a lot of guilt. You know, I have a lot of guilt, man. Like, knowing that we're paying for this shit, it doesn't make you feel good. You know what I mean? Like, it makes you feel like, shit, dude, I need to stop this from happening. And I need to do something about it because I'm paying for this to happen. Like, I have no problem defending myself and even defending this country. That's one thing. But we're on the other side of the world helping people die by bombing them and doing and funding extremely questionable sides of conflicts. And like we're indirectly funding ISIS right now. Some would argue that it's even more direct than indirect, but Saudi Arabia is the main source of funding and arms for ISIS, and we give them the weapons and stuff. Like, we know. You know, we know where these things are going. All these weapons have serial numbers on them, and you can trace those things. But, like, it is a source of guilt knowing you're paying for this shit. It sucks, and that's why we need to make it stop. And here's the thing, and I meant to bring this up at the beginning of the show, but it slipped my mind, but why not? It's relevant now as it was then. And this, to me, is kind of epitomizing the uphill battle that we're facing here. Because, you know, we started this radio show probably 3.5-4 years ago, and we were at a time then that is much different than we are now. You know, believe it or not, things have changed quite a bit in some ways. You know, other ways they've stayed the same, but things have changed quite a bit. But this weekend in Berkeley, DB, I don't know if you saw this, but dudes were just taking each other's heads off up there, fighting it out in the streets between, like, it was basically alt-right, you know, Donald Trump, fascist, white supremacist, a group of people. They weren't all the same, of course, but I would call it, to accurately sum it up, I would say it was an alt-right rally at Berkeley.
Were any of these people paid?
I don't know. There's a possibility, but
I mean, there. Depending on the percentages of the paid agitators, it's legitimate or not. But I realize there's a lot of frustration and tension, and a lot of it's even unspoken and under the waves or under the current. But I mean, that straight looked like a theater production, dude.
Yeah, it did look kind of strange, right? But, you know, in the end, what we're dealing with here is, to generalize, fascists versus communists. And this is the kind of, like, and to me, it's so weird and interesting to think about at the same time, is that, you know, this is the battle that was fought in Europe. You know, it was kind of the communists versus the fascists, and they kind of just went out and they all killed each other. And now we're starting to see the beginning stages. And I do think that there was undercover cops involved there, obviously. I mean, in Berkeley, you remember back when the anti-police movements were going strong. Remember there was a cop that got busted infiltrating one of the protests up there at Berkeley? You remember that? And he pulled out a gun and everything because someone figured out he was a cop and they were about to beat his ass and he pulled out a gun. You remember that? Anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The cops are already known for doing that in Berkeley, so I don't doubt that there were several people who had infiltrated, you know, those protests. But that being said, still, there is definitely a brewing battle going on, and I see it both online and in real life between these neo-fascists, and I don't know how to exactly label these left. These people on the left, but I guess you could call them like neo-communists or something like that. A lot of them are anarchists and just far left socialists and stuff like that. And then the guys on the right are like extremely conservative, alt-right. You know, some of them, they were actually giving out Nazi salutes and shit. And these guys are straight up fascists. They're fighting each other. And so, you know, the whole point I want to get to here is that I think in the end, both of these groups of people are kind of similar, right? In the fact that I think they both are trying, they're both so frustrated with the way things have gone. And they're frustrated with the system, they're frustrated with politics, they're frustrated with the economy and all the things that have wrought our, you know, way of life. And the one thing that was in common among all of those people down there, and this was very plain to see, was that all the people whooping each other's asses down there were young people, dude. They're all around the same age. Like, these are the guys, these are the fighting age people that would actually, these are the kind of guys that would be foot soldiers of a revolution if they were to get their shit together and stop punching each other in the streets of Berkeley and start punching politicians. Not advocating violence here, and I'm not telling anybody to go out and punch a politician, but I'm just saying. Like, the big thing, the big lesson that I saw from this whole thing is that the propaganda, dude, it's working. It's working like a damn charm. The people who are most motivated to take action to solve the perceived wrongs that they see in the world, they were out punching each other in Berkeley this weekend instead of taking direct action against the system that they're all frustrated with. And this is the thing. And this, the thing is, it's so brilliant the way that the political machinery in this country has developed it, like an immune system, basically. It has ways of diffusing activist movements and general frustration among the public by, instead of allowing all the attention to be placed where it belongs, which is on the oligarchy, the ruling class, the elite, who are causing all these problems, and the people instead turn it inward upon themselves and fight left and right, divide and conquer. It's the time, you know, the timeless tactic that's been used by governments for a very, very, very long time, and it works. It works wonders, and it's working wonders right now in the United States. While our government leads us off into yet who knows how many other wars, these fools are out there knocking each other out in Berkeley. What are they accomplishing? And I'll admit, I sympathize more with the anti-fascist people. I'll admit that. I definitely sympathize further on that because to me, being a brown dude, I cannot sympathize with white supremacist fascists at all. Like, I just, that does not... anywhere do I connect with those people.
Oh, come on, Nick.
You know what I'm saying? So I definitely like have a little more sympathy towards anti-fascists, but still, what were you accomplishing? What are people accomplishing by going out there and beating each other in the face when you guys are all just working class or even middle class and working class people who are young, who are frustrated, that are pissed off, they know something is wrong, but they choose to beat each other up instead of beating up the real problem? That to me is what is very telling about what's going on. The propaganda has worked. It's transitioned over to the internet. All these alt-right, chat rooms and message boards and forums and shit, those things have replaced the mainstream media when it comes to polarizing, divide and conquer and that kind of thing. Like, these guys don't watch TV, they don't watch CNN, and they don't fall susceptible. They're not susceptible to that bullshit propaganda, but they fall susceptible to similar propaganda that they find online, you know. And so, and maybe it's playing human nature against itself and taking advantage of like tribalism and all that stuff. That's, you know, it's all very Bernaysian, and the way that it's, you know, done mathematically and scientifically, they turn us against each other smartly. They're not sloppy, dude. Like, we think all this alt-right and nationalism and white supremacy, all this uptick, you think it's just organic, or are these guys trying to promote these ideas? I think that there's definitely they're trying to promote polarization so that the public neutralizes itself. You know, if you guys are beating each other up in Berkeley, then what do these politicians have to worry about? You're not worried about them.
Yeah, why aren't you getting pissed off about the 12 cents a gallon in tax?
These dudes are too beating up Bernie Sanders support.